This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdal. One of the surest ways to create a thriving black market in something, commodities specifically, is to make it illegal. Drugs, of course. U.S. dollars in closed economies is another good example. Also, elephant ivory. The market there is, for want of a better word, booming, despite bans on international trade and crackdowns in many African countries. Damon Tabor wrote about the illegal ivory trade from source to final sale in the current issue of Men's Journal. Damon, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
This is an amazing story because it is an industrial story. It's a workforce story. It's a labor market story. It's a poaching story. It's an illegal story. I mean, there's everything in elephants, man.
It's true. I think what's really dramatically changed over the last several decades is the nature of poaching. The 1970s, 1980s, the last time we faced a great poaching crisis like this, you know, you had subsistence hunters who were killing maybe one, two, three elephants, something on a much lower scale. And now you've seen that really dramatically changed.
Maybe we ought to back up and get the lay of the market, if you will. There is amazing demand growing in China, and that fuels poaching in Africa, and it becomes then circular, right?
The demand is a function of sort of Chinese, you know, rising middle class. You have a sizable portion of China's population that now has disposable income and can afford to spend it on things like ivory trinkets and these intricately carved ivory statues.
Walk me through it, how this happens. Is it that poachers are just going out and killing it and supplying the market, or do they, I don't know, do they get a phone call from some guy running an ivory shop in Beijing that says, I need 40 tusks by Tuesday?
I think both. You see a range across the poaching trade. One gentleman that I interviewed for the story, Justin, you know, he had created basically a Walmart-style just-in-time inventory system, which is to say he would get an order from his buyers in China. And then he had a team of poachers working in the southeast of Cameroon, and he would transmit the order to them. They would go out, kill the elephants, and then Justin would pick them up, and then he would drive them from sort of the southeast remote part of Cameroon to the port, and then from the port, the ivory hit a customs official that was on his payroll, and from there it would be shipped to China.
You say, and I love this line actually, that the demand now and the poaching now has exceeded the reproductive capacity of the elephants, which means, of course, there will eventually be no more elephants left. What do these traders, what do the poachers, what do the folks in the stalls in Beijing say when you say, you know what, this is, it's going away?
You know, with the traders and the dealers and the middlemen that I spoke to in China and Vietnam, there's not a great deal of care for an animal that is several thousand miles away and they don't deal with directly. It doesn't affect their lives in an intimate, real way.
But the poachers then, huh?
Pierre, one of the poachers that I spoke with there in Cameroon, you know, he was an interesting case because I think he represents a lot of what you see in Africa and the battle that conservationists, environmentalists face, which is that Pierre was making essentially a rational economic decision. He was able to make several hundred dollars by poaching elephants and going into the jungle for 2 or 3 weeks. And with that money, he's able to feed his family. He's able to take care of his parents. He's able to send his children to school. And, you know, there were few other opportunities for him in the part of Cameroon where he lived. And I think it's a decision that very few of us wouldn't make in his shoes either.
Damon Tabor, his article is called The Ivory Highway, about the elephant and ivory poaching business. It's in Men's Journal. Damon, thanks very much.
Thanks so much for having me.